good to set the scene for so people that have never heard of Hanaho or Dadaism. Could you just give us a little brief whistle stop overview of Dadaism to sort of lay the groundwork of the brilliant Hana?
So Dadaism, there's so many isms, but Dadaism, it was a very kind of short-lived small artist movement in Germany in the Weimar Republic, I believe, after the First World War and just before the Second World War. And there was this period where, you know, Germany lost the First World War and people were expecting them to kind of pick up the pieces and, you know, sort things out. And I think there was this big kickback against military and the politics, you know, of the time. And Dadaism was very playful and very non-traditional. It was like almost like they were building their own new art world, you know, from the rubble of the First World War. I think it's really interesting. But yeah, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really beautiful like overview of what Dadaism is, because it's really, really grounded in what was happening at the time, isn't it? That's mm-hmm. so important when you look at these works in terms of understanding context and even materials, the types of materials that they could get hold of, because, excuse my French, it was an absolute show in Germany after World War I. The 1919, they signed the Treaty of Versailles, where essentially Germany had to accept complete responsibility for World War I. And economically, it just crippled the country. It was really quite a difficult time. And Dadaism was actually founded by a group of artists that fled Germany in just sort of the start of World War One, or in the middle of it. So it was founded, it was actually founded in Zurich in Switzerland, which I found
I didn't know that.
Really interesting. Yeah. So they fled because Switzerland famously is a neutral country. So it was never part of any of the world wars. And they sought refuge in Zurich as this like safe space. So they founded it in this little bar in Germany, in Zurich, sorry, which is still there to this day. And they would gather and they would sort of like chat about what Dadaism is. And as you said, created this movement. And then when World War One ended, they all went, they all sort of spread out through Europe. And there was certain hubs of it, but Berlin was the German hub. And that's where Hanaho was based and where she came across a couple of other characters whose names we'll also butcher because our German pronunciations are shocking, but that's fine.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the main thing to take away is what they were working with and sort of fighting against. Because when you think about it, they were active at a time just as the Nazi Party, which would eventually become the Nazi Party, was on the rise.
Yeah.
And that's where I think it's really interesting, the time frame that you've selected the images for your three that you want to chat about. But I think let's set the scene a little bit further and then maybe let's introduce Hana. Can you tell us a little bit about Hana and her involvement in this Dadaist group in Berlin?
So one other thing I remembered while you were talking about Dada is a nonsense word, so it doesn't have a meaning either, which I think really fits well with the movement because not that it's nonsense, but I like that the whole idea that it is using unusual methods to make art and throwing out new ideas. It must have been really exciting at the time and been really sort of fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. And a bit sort of mental as well, like just sort of coming off the back of a world war and then seeing what this group of people were throwing together. Yeah, absolutely. And the Dadaist group in Berlin are also sort of very famous for like coming up with the idea of photo montage, which is what?
Yes, yeah. And it's interesting because when you think about collage, I think, you know, there's famous collage artists. Picasso did some, George Braque, who else? Kurt Schwitters as well. He was a Dadaist figure as well. But a lot of their collage work was all very... It was using things like newspaper and sheet music and things, but it was using them for texture and shape and form, whereas Hanna Hoch actually created images from other images, which hadn't really been done before,
no,
to my knowledge. And it was really, I don't think she's given enough credit for being that groundbreaking, and they certainly didn't give her enough credit. You know, she was the only woman in the movement, and they did not treat her as an equal.
No.
And she did not like that very much at all. And she put elements of that into her artwork, which we'll talk about in particular with one of the pictures that I chose.
And what I found really interesting about it is how hypocritical the male Dadaists were, because they were promoting the idea of this modern female, that you had equality to man and you could be your own woman and you could go out and you don't have to adhere to certain standards and your appearance, and but behind closed doors, they weren't putting their money where their mouths were, because essentially, and there's lots of evidence of this and quotes of this, of essentially the guys sort of using Hannah when they had their meetings as essentially a glorified waitress / chef, which I found really disgusting. And it made me think, do you know when you have that question of like, who would you like to have at a dinner party, dead or alive? I would love to know how furious she was. Like, I would love to hear that rant from her firsthand.
She had a history of having people treat her like that as well. So when she went to design school, to art school and things, like, she did design because that's what her dad wanted her to do. And she was pulled out of school to look after her younger sister, and she was expected to do all these different things that she didn't want to do, you know. And I think the fact that continued even in her art career is, it's heartbreaking. It's really, really bad.
I didn't know that she was pulled out of school to look after, I didn't know she was pulled out of school. But she was a trained designer, and I think, did she not do like fashion or pattern making or something like that?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the whole point of like, or then I also read that she did something to do with graphics, because she worked for a magazine for a little while, something like that, did graphics.
And actually she was a really good painter and did lots of other stuff as well. I've seen a picture of her with some puppets that she made as well.
Oh.
And so she wasn't tied down to collage. She tried a hand at a lot of different art materials as well. So that's something else I love about her, because that's something I try to do in my own practice as well, is try out lots of different stuff. I think it's good to be experimental. And I think a lot of that fed into her collages as well, this like idea of fashion and textile, and just it all came together beautifully.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think that's a good reminder, I think, for anyone, regardless if you're an artist or not. Like, people love to pigeonhole you, don't they? Like, they need to know what's the thing that you do, because they just have to put you in a little box. And I just think that the world is big and life is long if you're lucky and you get all these different experiences. So why not flex your hand at lots of different things? Like, just try it. Like, I love the, I'm going to look up that image of her making puppets, because that to me is so completely fascinating. And I didn't know she painted. I thought she just did these photo montages. So there you are. That in itself as well shows you like, because when you do like a very sort of light Google, it's these montages that come up as the thing.
Yeah.
And there's one very, very famous work, which if I was a betting woman, I would have bet that you would have, that's the one with the kitchen knife one, cut from the knife.
Yeah.
Hold on. I've got the whole title somewhere here. So her most arguably, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong here, is cut with the kitchen knife. So Dada is the last Weimar beer belly cultural epoch of Germany, 1919 to 1920, rolls off the tongue as a title. And it's kind of like this cornerstone work that very much encompasses all the things that we've just been talking about. It's kind of like her poking fun at the political state, the consumerist state, the Dadaists themselves.
Yeah, it's almost like her own little manifesto in a piece of work. It's really good.
Yeah, it's really, really incredible. But you've chosen, really interestingly, works from after she technically left the movement, or left the group, rather, because...
Yes, yeah.
She, and this is what I think is people don't seem to realise, is Dadaism really, as you said beautifully at the start, it really wasn't a very long period in time that these people were active, but it's been so transformative for lots of artists in terms of using the movement as a springboard into pushing into abstraction and experimentation more and more. which I think is just incredible. Like, so again, it just shows you it doesn't matter how, like, it can be short and sweet and powerful. But she had a falling out. She kind of essentially, like, enough is enough in sort of the 1920s. I think it was like 1922, I've read. She kind of just washed her hands of the Berlin Dada group and said, I'm not interested in sort of being this thing that you look on as an amateur anymore. And I...
Yeah, and I'm so glad she did, because I think that I really, like, because all of my favourite images by her, my favourite pieces of work by her, are after that sort of period where she kind of really, I don't know, kind of showed off in a way.
How great she was. And I actually, what I love about the images that you've chosen is how, I don't know, it just shows you, like, how much she challenged the concepts and the norms of things. And again, I really kind of want to reiterate, you have to remember she's in a state where Nazism is, no, it's not called that as of yet, but Hitler is leading a political party. I think it's the German Workers Party in Germany. He's written Mein Kampf. He's gone to jail. He's tried to, like, run for power. It's not succeeded. I think it's 1933 is when he comes to power eventually. But the first image that you have chosen is called Indian Dancer. So can you tell me a little bit about it and what it is that you love about it so much?
So what I love about it most is that on first glance, you kind of see an image of a face, and it's made up of a lady. I think she was a famous model at the time, or a famous movie star. And it's collaged with I can't remember exactly where it's from, but it's like an ethnographic sculpture. It's part of a series she did called Ethnographic Museum, I think it was.
It's Cameroonian is what I've read.
Cameroonian. Oh, brilliant. Thank you. I should have made some notes.
That's all right.
And then in the headdress, there's almost sort of like knives and forks and spoons and, you know, cutlery. And I think on first glance, you would say, like, oh, what an interesting and strange picture. You know, it reminds me of these surrealist collages by Max Ernst, which are just weird. And you're like, oh, but there's more going on, lots more going on. So it's, to start with, it's the Cameroonian mask is quite sort of male looking, and it's got that mixture of female and male elements. And she was very kind of androgynous herself. And that was something that, you know, she depicted in her work, was this androgyny, this new woman that the Dadaists kind of idealized was not traditionally, or not supposed to be traditionally feminine. And not, you know, tied to the kitchen and looking after the kids and, you know, all these stereotypical roles. And this image kind of has that element in it as well, with the knives and forks, which are these very kind of, you know, that's utensils used, you know, for cooking and things like that. And they're used instead as this, you know, headdress, this...
It's a crown of domesticity.
Something that signifies, you know, power or elegance. And I just think that's really clever. And, you know, I don't think it was, I don't know, it's difficult. I don't think it was maybe appreciated very much at the time. She was years ahead.
And I'm going to be very honest with you. When I first saw it, I didn't like, and I've said to you that, like, and I said it while recording, when you sent me the three images, I was like, oh, they're very similar. And they're absolutely not, because it's the stories behind them that you have to really understand. So that actress that you've mentioned, she was a very famous French actress, and her best known part even now is Joan of Arc. And it was called The Passion of Joan of Arc. And if you look at the sort of movie stills from it, she wears a crown of thorns as, like, being equal to Christ. So I love that she's kind of given her, like, a crown of cutlery cutlery. I find it really, really interesting. And again, like, you have to really, like, at the time, I think people would have known, because the movie was apparently huge. It came out in 1928. This is, I think, 1930 is when this work was shown. And Hannah, and when she showed work, she was, like, widely acclaimed. Like, she did have, like, a very good following. She, like, her works were celebrated. Like, she was seen as being able to go sort of toe-to-toe with the Dadaists, even after sort of removing herself from the group and the title. But I love that the more I was able to sort of like dig into this, that I was like, that's so interesting. And then the masks sort of talking about sort of looting and the wars and sort of stealing things and sort of reclaiming them as your own.